Welcome to Free Speech Bites. I'm Kirsty Hughes, Chief Executive at Index on Censorship. Free Speech Bites is our podcast series made in association with SAGE. In this series, Nigel Warburton interviews a number of leading figures about free expression and why it matters.
Natalia Kaliada is co-founder of the Belarus Free Theatre. I asked her about freedom of expression in Belarus, the last dictatorship in Europe. In the course of the interview, she describes her own experience of torture. Natalia Kaliada, welcome to Free Speech Bites.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Nigel. Very nice to meet you.
The topic we're going to focus on is free speech in Belarus. Now, I suspect some people listening to this won't realise just how repressive the government in Belarus is. I wonder if you could just say a little bit about what Belarus is like.
I believe I would start even not only from explaining how repressive the Belarusian regime is, but I would tell to our audience where this country is located, because many people do not know where is it located. So it is located in between Poland and Russia, and it's located just 2.5 hour flight from London or any other European capital. It's located right in the heart of Europe. For the last 18 years, the country is ruled by Alexander Lukashenko, who is called the last dictator of Europe. And there are political kidnappings, murders, tortures going on in our country. All possible articles of Universal Declaration of Human Rights are violated in our country. There is no independent media. Journalists are killed. There are no independent news. So everything is under unbelievable suppression.
So presumably, there is no free expression.
If it's possible to say that there is free expression, but it's underground. So it's very controversial because it's not possible for audience in Europe to understand that it's possible to have freedom of expression only underground, where everything is suppressed. When we talk at the Dublin International Theatre Festival, we said public space exists only underground in Belarus. Exactly the same stuff. So it's not possible for the public space exist underground, because public space, it's open to everyone. Same thing with freedom of expression. It's possible to find theater performances, it's possible to find concerts, but all of it would be in apartments, in private houses. And again, then we have this question whether we have freedom of expression, because if you have freedom of expression, all these performances and concerts and books, it would be distributed in bookstores or big theaters or big concert halls. But no, it's suppressed. So yes, there is a voice, but there is no freedom to this voice.
Just to get this clear, if I stood in a public square and said, I hate Lukashenko, I think his moustache is ridiculous, I don't think you should vote for him in any election, it's just a farce, what would happen to me?
It depends how loud you do. If you are alone saying that, nobody would hear that, nothing would happen to you. But if it's very obvious street protest, even if you are alone, as it was happening with Олесь Пушкин, who is a famous Belarusian artist, who was arrested when he was the only one, but he brought a thing with a, forgive my language, with a cow's shit, and he brought a portrait of Lukashenko, he put it on that shit, and he brought it to the presidential residency. He was arrested and he sat years in jail, but he was the only person who went to do it. Even if you are alone, and if you go and make a very clear statement, you would be arrested there.
Are you saying it's mainly the police that actually restricts people, or does the government use other people sometimes to hide behind, as it were?
It's not just police. We have KGB and its intelligence forces that interrogate people and intimidate people. It's very easy to give an example based on our story, because just imagine that you are a spectator, 15 years old boy, and you study in a secondary school. Somehow it's happened that KGB informers, they could film you when you come to a meeting point and from where you are taken to a place where we perform. So this is what they do. They will not arrest you right away, but they film you in order then to make a pressure on you. And then you're in a school and some people in black uniforms come to you and say, if you go to this performance, you will not get your secondary education. It's not possible to believe in it because secondary education in Belarus, it's obligatory education. You should get it. There is no way to avoid it. But you are threatened that you will not get even this education, and there is no chance for a young person to get a higher education after such threats. If a person continues to go to our performance, he is threatened that his parents would lose their jobs. We call it silent repressions, and there are many, many mechanisms how to make people to build up this very strong fear and self-censorship. And it in all possible ways of the society, because if you imagine last summer of 2011, people were getting to the streets all over Belarus, and it was happening for the first time for the last 17 years of dictatorship. And they were coming to the squares of major cities of Belarus to clap or to use mobile phones when they would put, for example, 8 o'clock in the evening, where they would get to the square and they would put alarm clock on it and it would just buzz. So you get arrested for that. 2,000 people got arrested over summer for doing nothing. And New York Times wrote an article that in Belarus you could be arrested for doing nothing. This was one of the ways how people resisted. So they wanted to show that there is no need to use arms and weapons, but it's just possible to go and stay there in order for authorities to understand there are so many people who are against them, but to show that we do believe in nonviolent resistance and we do believe that it could be changed this way. But people got arrested and police was using ambulance cars to instead of paddy wagons. And the only time when it was used in our history, it was Stalin time. And it's possible to compare only to it. So it's in every single level. There are informers, there are intelligence forces, and there are 16 different special forces, 16 in Belarus, that suppress people.
Now, you've been personally involved with the Belarus Free Theatre. Perhaps you could say a bit about how that got started and the sorts of performances that you put on.
We started with my husband in 2005. It was a moment when it was absolutely clear that it's not possible to have street rallies, street protests, and all possible ways of resistance were checked. We tried whatever was possible. And then we thought that we will just start theater. And I should be honest with you, we wanted to do theater not because of resistance, because we just wanted to do the theater. And Nikolai was writing plays, and we started to meet with many Belarusian playwrights who received many, many awards outside of Belarus, but they were prohibited inside of Belarus. And we thought that maybe we need to bring all these names back to the country and try to present them to a Belarusian audience. And playwrights, they're very unique with regards to mirroring situation in the society. Not doing political stuff, but doing theater, you could get the same communication between people and inform each other and enrich each other with experience. Again, British playwrights as Mark Ravenhill and Sarah Kane, they were good teachers for us, who were able to show us examples how they wrote on their societies, on their lives. And we met with Vladimir Sherbin, who is our partner who joined us, and we started to do theater together with him. And we had only two actresses at that time. And it was not possible for us to present Sarah Kane in Belarus because she was writing on issues that was not possible at all to present in Belarusian society, as sexual minorities, as suicide, because Belarusian authorities say that there are no such topics in Belarus. But You can't find any gay club in Belarus because it's suppressed. If there are gay parades, 15, 20 minutes, everyone in the woods is threatened to be raped and killed. If you talk about suicide, Belarus stays on one of the first five countries in Europe on suicide. So these are topics that exist in the society, and they are not political ones. But everything in such country, like Belarus, become political.
Were you putting on your plays in actual theatres?
In Belarus, we never put our productions in actual theatres. When we had the press conference with Nikolai, the day when we announced that Belarus Free Theatre starts its existence, it was just a press conference, but we didn't have any place, we didn't have any actors, any directors. In a month when we met with Vladimir and two actresses, so it was kind of that starting point. There were just five of us looking for a place where we could perform British playwright in Belarus. And we checked up to 30 places, and it was not possible for us to find any. Finally, we found it. It was in suburbs of Minsk. And since that time, we started to perform in very different locations, bars, clubs, restaurants, woods. But same time, like today, we got back from Amsterdam, where we performed at the Staatshouwburg. This is the main theater of the Netherlands.
Through your theatre, you said you began because you're passionate about theatre, but you clearly rubbed up against the government in various ways. So you are now an enemy, you've become refugees. You were imprisoned by the government briefly. Could you just say something about that and what it was like?
First of all of it started before the theatre, because Nikolai, he was very famous journalist. He led three major newspapers, independent newspapers in Belarus, and all of them got closed down. I was working for American government, and I had my lone story of when KGB followed me every single day when I was going to the office and from the office. It's about names. So in our country, for authorities, it's very clear what you do. It really doesn't matter whether you do a newspaper or you do theater. It's just who you are. And then it would be prohibition on your name. So this is the major idea, that nobody in the whole country would know you. And so people will not start to think that there are some alternatives and there are people who think differently from the authorities. So this is the major thing. With regards to repressions, I was detained four times, but all of it was shortly, especially knowing experience of all our friends who sat in jails for 2 years. I started to talk about my experience after a very close friend of us who gave us a place where to live here in the UK, in Aldershot, Irina Bogdanova, who leads the campaign Free Belarus Now. Her brother got to jail, Andrei Sannikov, who was the major presidential candidate from Democratic Forces in Belarus. I said, I can't share my experience because I was in jail for 20 hours. And she said, you should do it because then people would understand what's happening to them who are still in jail for many years. And 20 hours for me was more than enough in order, when I see water, I will drink it, because I still have in my mind that I could be deprived of this possibility, because within 20 hours, we were deprived of sleep, water, toilet. We've been staying alone, walls of a lone corridor with our hands back, and it was not possible to move. If you move, then a special division of police soldiers, they beat you up. There were different ways of humiliation, because we had the women floor, but in the end, police started to bring men to our floor, and if somebody from men would say that I need to go to toilet, so police would say, then in order to understand what it means to be humiliated, you need to shit your pants in front of women. And this is exactly, it's not possible to believe that all of it is happening in Europe today. In January of 2011, it was 2 weeks after crackdown after presidential elections, when up to 2,000 people got arrested. Our friends who were in KGB jail when it was minus 30 Celsius outside, they were taken out of their cells. They were stripped, stretched, and electroshocked. And again, our scream about tortures in Belarus and how to make the world to hear that. Why, if it's happening right here, nobody wants to pay attention to it? When Nikolai was in jail, and it was in 2004, he was kept in, it's called stone glass, so it's 80 centimeters on 80 centimeters cell, and obviously there are no windows there, you just can't move there. And he was there only 5 hours, but he is claustrophobic, and these 5 hours still make our life very complicated because he lost his ability to breathe. It's still coming back every like 3-4 months, so we never know when it happens, when he can't sleep. It's like attacks of suffocation. So it's 5 hours in Belarusian jail could make these things to you.
And your crimes were showing opposition to the government. That was the limit of what you'd done.
We started a global artistic campaign that was called Free Belarus. And we started to ask artists from different countries of the world. And there were three of them. First, who did their video appeals, it was Sir Tom Stoppard, President Václav Havel, who introduced us to Mick Jagger, and three of them made video appeals to the people of Belarus, and they said that we wish you freedom of expression, assembly, and all these words of support for people in Belarus to understand that there are people in the world who support them and who think about them. And all of them ended up saying, long live Belarus, живи Belarus, in Belarusian language, and we put it all of it on the internet, chata97.org, the major website in Belarus. Founder of this website was killed in September of 2010, and editor-in-chief of this website was in jail after the 19th of December in KGB jail. So actually that was a starting point for Belarusian authorities to react on our activities as a theater company, because they understood that if such artists support Belarus, and when Mick Jagger says, I would come and give a concert when there is no dictatorship in Belarus, for Lukashenko it's very clear message, because Mick Jagger came to Czechoslovakia after Velvet Revolution and he gave a concert there. So he understand that all of it is possible, and that's why they got very scared of this amazing support of artists who started to make these statements. That's why they started to react to what we do, to every single movement that we do. And again, on the 19th of December of 2010, again, I read a letter of Václav Havel, who sent a letter of support to the people of Belarus. And again, I read appeals of Jude Law, Sienna Miller, Sam West, Adjo Andu, to people of Belarus, to 50,000 people of Belarus who gathered at the square to protest against falsification of the elections. And when I was in jail, it was absolutely unbelievable, because women, it was obviously not possible for them to see me, because like all of us were very far away from each other. And they said, do you imagine these people support us? And it's such a strong message to them. And exactly we're coming to this idea of freedom of expression for people in Belarus who go to protest against falsification of presidential elections, to understand that artists from London and President of Czech Republic send them support. It's just unbelievable. And this is the moment when they stay in jail facing walls and talking about that. I think this is the whole meaning of our activities. That's why we can't stop it.
Natalia Koliada, thank you very much.
It was a great pleasure to talk to you.
For more information about Index on Censorship, go to www.indexoncensorship.org.